Let's get to the great Jerry Palm in the mix and in the hunt with us. Jerry Palm's with College BCS and CollegeRPI.com. Gerald Palm, are you going to change the name of your website? Are you going to change the name of your website now?
Well, I got a little bit of news for you. In fact, I apparently have more news for you than I thought. First of all, I'm not Gerald. I'm just Jerry. CollegeBCS.com and CollegeRPI.com are going away and being absorbed into CBSSports.com. So I will be working exclusively for them now.
So this has really happened for you. You've done great work all these years, and you've really worked hard, and you know, you just threw that out there several years ago. Tell your story. You were just a guy. We found you several years ago. You were just a guy who was doing it out of your house, right? It was a labor of, I mean, you weren't making any money out of it.
I still do it out of my house. But, it started as a hobby for me, Tony. I mean, I was interested in the RPI. The formula changed in the 93-94 season, back when the Internet was in its infancy. And I found the data, and I just started putting it together for my own edification. Shared it on news groups, which is the caveman writing on the wall version of message boards and forums now, and enough people were interested in it that I gave it a website, and somebody in the media found me, and it exploded from there. And it wasn't anything I set out to do. It started as a hobby. It wasn't even, you know, my job per se until 2002. So, it's pretty remarkable. I would have never expected anything like this to happen. I never thought I would be an internet publisher, because there wasn't an internet when I was growing up. In fact, there was barely an internet when I started publishing. But it's a strange thing that has become. So the BCS obviously is that name. It looks like it's going to go away, but it's going to be replaced with something that is barely any different than what we have now.
Let's talk about that. Before we do that, I want to reflect on the BCS, because you are Mr. BCS, as far as I'm concerned. And so a part of you, in a way, is dying. I mean, I don't want to make this sound like an old love song, but, you know, it's like walking in the rain and the snow, you know, when there's nowhere to go, and you're feeling like a part of you is dying today, Jerry Palm, on the program.
Not really. Not really.
The things we do for love, and it started out as labor. But let me ask you this. It started out as labor of love. There were some greatest hits of this thing early on, the BCS. And I say this today live in our perch at Smoky Mountain Brewery. A couple of my favorite things. First of all, early on in the infancy, there was a part of the equation was the Massey poll. Do you remember the Massey poll? Remember having that kid on?
Still part of it. And
that kid told us, he was at Virginia Tech, right? Who was the kid at Virginia Tech?
Yes, Massey was at Virginia Tech. I don't know if he's still there. I don't think he's still there, okay. But yes, he was at Virginia Tech.
And he used to have to go to his mother's computer in her basement to crunch his numbers to send his poll in. I mean, how he got selected to be part of that first one. And then the other one they had a lady from, and I remember this because Tennessee was involved in that first one. They had a lady from the New York Times who was helping to compile their poll, and she was the home and garden editor, Jerry Palm.
Yep.
Am I making that up?
You happen to know how to run the computer.
I'm not making that up, am I?
No, absolutely not.
So we're really going to miss.
They originally picked three rankings. The very first year, there were only three computers used, and they picked them because they were associated with newspapers. Because Sagarin was in USA Today, and Anderson Hester was in the Seattle Times, and the New York Times. So they because they felt that gave them some credibility. And then they decided three wasn't enough the first year, and they added five more. Massey was part of that. And,
so Massey came in the second year, and he used to go to his mom's basement to crunch his numbers. He told us that on the air. He was a student working out of a dorm room at Virginia Tech, and he was a part of this super powerful formula in college football. Am I making that up, Jerry?
Nope, no, absolutely not. And, you know, like Richard Billingsley is basically an insurance salesman in Oklahoma. You know, Wes Colley he's a scientist, but it's not math. It's astronomy or something like that. These guys come from various walks of life. Peter Wolf is a doctor at UCLA. I mean, a medical doctor at UCLA.
Is he still part of it, Peter Wolf?
It's a pretty diverse group.
Peter Wolf, what's his poll?
It's just Wolf Computer Rankings. They're just part of the BCS.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Oh my gosh! How do they find these people, Jerry?
Well, the internet's a wonderful tool. My guess is Google. And they asked a few for, to see their numbers and see what they look like and did an eyeball test and said these look reasonable and they don't have the formulas except for Colli's, which is publicly available. They don't have a way to audit. They don't bother auditing. They just hope for the best.
How do I spell Colli's name?
Colley. Wes Colli.
And he's an insurance salesman?
No. That was Billingsley. I think it's the insurance salesman. Colli is a scientist.
But he's not a numbers guy, right? He's a scientist.
He's a scientist. He's not a mathematician. But you got to know a fair amount of math to do what he does, you know. And his is the one where the formula is publicly available, based on statistics theory. It's the one that I can check. So I do. I've actually found a couple of mistakes in it in the past. But,
including
one
at
the end of, not last season, but the year before. There was a mistake in his rankings that actually affected the final season, which I found.
I mean, Jerry, we're going to miss the BCS. You know, it was...
Well, you're not going to see something that much different, though, to be honest. I mean, they're not going to call it the BCS. But you're basically talking about a 14 playoff played in bowl games. So there's going to be basically one more game somewhere. And, instead of using computers to pick teams, they're going to do something even dumber and have a selection committee do it. And the reason it's dumb is because, to me, it's overkill if you have more people on your selection committee than you have teams to pick. So you're going to pick four teams, and that's going to be politically charged. Because all selection committees are politically charged. And, the nice thing about computers, criticize them all you want, and the BCS computers deserve a lot of criticism.
Jerry, are you there?
The nice thing about a computer is it applies whatever standard it has evenly to everybody. Committees are never going to do that.
Jerry still there, Bri? Sounds like he's not.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Yeah, are you not hearing me, Tony?
We'll get him back.
Tony.
What do you think? What he's saying so far.
If they're going to have a selection committee, are they going to make the names known who's selecting? Like, is the public going to know who's selected? Because you'll talk about some... I mean, that's going to end up being more criminal, isn't it? Because people are going to be... Think about how much some booster from Alabama is going to throw at somebody that's in a selection committee to get Alabama in some spot. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's going to end up being more corrupt than it is now, and it's already corrupt. Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I just see this whole thing opening the door for way more corruption. That's what I see. That's my problem.
Bonnie boy, let me know when we have Jerry back.
Let's try him one more time.
Oh, and here's the thing, and we'll talk to Jerry about this. We've seen in the past how Texas politicked their way into BCS games.
But they won.
No. Well, one year they politicked their way. It might have been the national title game. I'm going to ask Jerry about that, about how.
The only BCS game Texas didn't win was the national championship game, and they were undefeated.
It's already a proven fact, though, that these people will politic their way in. They'll pervert the system.
There's no doubt about it.
So,
but I'm saying that if you do a selection committee and you make known who the names are on the selection committee, then there's going to be more politicking and more doors will be open for not criminal activity, but for cheating.
Hey, Jerry, as I welcome you back, what do you say about what my partner's saying? Yeah, what do you say about what my partner's saying here that now the system's going to be really corruptible with this deal?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think that's what I was just saying when you lost me there, is that for whatever criticism the BCS computers deserve, and they certainly deserve some, the nice thing about a computer being used to pick teams is that you can tell the computer what standard you want to use, and it applies that standard evenly to everybody without regard to the name on the front of the jersey or history or tradition or crap like that, and people aren't like that. Now, I'm comfortable with the way the selection committee works in basketball, but it wasn't always that way. You know, and the basketball committee is picking 68 teams and seeding, or they're picking 37, but they're seeding and bracketing 68 teams. That's a lot of work. You need a committee to do that. I mean, picking four teams, it's a selection committee is overkill. It's kind of stupid, really. And for me, the standard is, if you have fewer teams to pick than members on your committee, you don't need a committee.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, can't most of us look at the top four teams in college football and go, those are the top four teams, stick them out there and let them play? I mean, can't most
of us? Yeah, I think most years you would find agreement on probably three of the four. But that's not always true. I mean, that year that LSU won the title with two losses, I mean, you had Ohio State sitting there with one loss. They were the number one team. And I think pretty much everybody would have agreed that team belonged in, but you had abject chaos behind Ohio State. You could have picked, I mean, I'm not sure an 18 playoff would have been big enough for that particular year in order to get everybody in that was capable of winning a title. And the problem with here's the problem with a 14 playoff, Tony. It doesn't solve a single problem that the BCS currently has. This doesn't solve anything. Yeah, so for whatever criticism you can lob at the BCS, this new system doesn't fix any of it. It might make some of the problems less likely, but it doesn't fix anything. And because of that, before the very first semifinal game is played 2 years from now, it will be a system that the majority of college football fans, and probably a high majority of the college football fans, will already dislike.
Very strong comments from Jerry Palm. Jerry, in your world, how should they play it? If they're going to go with this four-team deal, should they stay
with
the
There's no good way
BCS?
To do it, Tony, to be honest with you. I mean, if I were in charge, I would make the semifinals on campus sites and give the higher seeds a bit of a reward. But, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, there's no good way to do this because it's not inclusive enough. I mean, I would pick the teams the way they're being picked now, more or less. I'd probably put more emphasis on computers and polls, but I would require computers to be open and accountable, not secret formulas. But there isn't a good way because it doesn't fix the basic problem, which is that you have a tournament that is inclusive enough to make sure that all of the teams capable of winning such a tournament get a chance to do so. So however you pick the teams, whatever you do, there's going to be controversy. It's not going to be a system that is well-liked, and it's not going to have a very long honeymoon at all. In fact, I think it might not have any honeymoon whatsoever.
Jerry, and you're talking about teams getting left out. To me, it feels like it's going to end up being like the NCAA tournament where they're 64, then they expand to 68 because nobody can be happy.
Here's the thing about the NCAA tournament. 32 is big enough
for
the NCAA tournament. To get everybody in that's got a shot of winning the thing. Okay, we've got 64. They went to 68. To me, that was pointless, but whatever. They did it. At least they didn't go to 128, which they were talking about. But you water down your regular season and you water down your tournament the bigger you make it, especially since you're adding teams that can't really win anyway. But football does not have the courage to do a playoff right the first time.
What does that mean, Jerry?
The fans, right? That the fans, there was an outcry from the fans. They were tired of getting beat up over this system. Fans wanted more. They wanted something good, and what they gave them was something one-cheeked. And that's, you know, that's not, they're not going to satisfy. They know they're not going to satisfy everybody, but I think what they're going to find is they don't satisfy anybody.
Anybody, yep. Jerry, what would you do? Here's where I'm at. I'll tell you where I'm at. You tell me if we're on the same path. I look at other designations of college football. 16-team playoff works, Jerry. Why not go with 16 teams?
To me, that is the only clean playoff that works, because you can include all of the conference champions, even the Troy State and Louisiana Techs or whatever. They can all get in, and you still have room for everybody who can win the tournament to get in as an at-large. I mean, you're going to get the top dozen teams pretty much every year in a 16-team playoff anyway, and then you'll have, like, you know, three or four conference champions that are getting in as a reward for winning their conference, like we have a basketball tournament, and then you've got to play it, you know, because it's football, you'll play it at campus sites until you get to the final, and you have a big, you know, to-do with the final like we do now, and like just about every other level of football does. And, you know, they complain about the academic calendar, but everybody's got that issue, and they just deal with it. But they don't want to deal with it. But really what they don't want to do is destroy the bowl and what they consider diluting the value of the regular season.
So, Jerry, on the way out here, if I'm hearing you correctly, you say a lot of this is window dressing. Listen, I have Mike Huguenin on from Rivals, a guy who I have a lot of respect for, really knows the game, really loves it.
He's like good. Yeah.
Really passionate. You know, he really, really thinks about this stuff. He said, listen, he said this four-team deal is going to be good for one TV negotiation. He said eventually they're going to have to expand because this is not going to make anybody happy, just like you said. He said eventually, and he's a bowl system guy. He hates this totally. He said eventually what we're going to see is an 8 and then a 16-team deal. So he thinks it's coming, but he thinks they're going to go kicking and dragging. Do you feel the same way, that they're going to go kicking and dragging?
It took them 14 years to realize that the BCS wasn't going to satisfy people. But the BCS had a honeymoon period. You know, I mean, people were glad because you had this problem where you couldn't even get 1 and 2 together in a bowl game. Okay? So that was, you know, kind of a big problem. They couldn't, you know, some years get even, you know, a true champion of any sense. And so they gave them this, which was the best compromise between what we had before, which was, you know, just bowl games, and a full playoff, which they didn't want to go to. So the BCS was the best compromise for that. This isn't a compromise for anything, because what now people want, now that they've seen this, they want a bigger playoff, but this doesn't give them a big enough playoff. So this isn't really a good compromise. This isn't preserving anything and giving people something more. It's not giving them anything more but one game. And that's just, they're going to find out very quickly that's not good enough. And, you know, John Swofford yesterday kept referring to this as like the next step forward. And I kind of pushed him on that, meaning, does that mean that there's going to be another step, or is this the final step? And he wouldn't bite. But, you know, when you're referring to this as the next step forward, I think that you're talking about that there's another step. And I think they know that's coming. They just don't want to go through the work of doing it now.
Isn't that the reality, though, that any kind of change, any kind of fundamental change, political change, and this is a political thing, let's not fool ourselves, this is extremely political.
It's totally political.
Absolutely. Political changes happen in small increments. Do you believe that the powers to be behind the scenes, the slides of the world, if they had their way, you can't just go from 0 to 16. So maybe Swofford, when he spoke there,
it takes a little courage to do that, but they could.
Right.
There's no reason why they couldn't. The only people getting hurt doing something like that are the bowls. And those are the relationships that they don't want to damage. But going from 0 to 16, there's no reason why they couldn't. They just didn't. But now you got to understand, this thing is going to get negotiated. We're going to have a probably 4-year, I don't know, they could go 6, I suppose, TV deal for this 14 thing. By the time that's over, or by the time the next negotiation cycle starts, at least 4 years from now, there's a good chance Mike Flive and Jim Delaney will be retired and out of the picture. And you'll have new leadership in the two most powerful conferences. So what happens at that point remains to be seen.
So a lot of this,
and
for 4 years,
and don't be surprised if Swofford is retired as well.
And Jerry, I respect your opinion, Jerry. So you're saying that in 4 years, you say, watch this thing. We're going to have this system till 2018. And then for those that are wanting that all-inclusive playoff, some of these older, because there's no doubt, some of these older players, when you start talking about Slive, okay, the Slides of the world, He's the power broker that wanted this. Roy Kramer is the guy who birthed the initial BCS. Let's point that out. The epicenter of college football when it comes to power is right where we are in the Southeastern Conference, Jerry. Are you going to deny that? I mean, this happened because Mike Slive wanted this to happen. That's why it happened.
Yeah, he definitely was the biggest proponent. And they had to come up with some ways to appease the Big Ten and the Pac-12, but which they apparently have. We don't have the details, but they apparently have. But the power in college football is in the SEC and the Big Ten, because that's where the largest fan bases are.
It's so interesting. So, Jerry, going forward, this 16-team thing, here's a scenario for you. How does college football handle this? One team goes undefeated. Three other teams, five other teams, six other teams have one loss. What then?
They don't handle that right now. I mean, you don't have to go too far back in history to see the problem. I gave you the one before with Ohio State and LSU. There were like two one-loss teams that year, one of which was not considered good enough to be considered for the title, and I want to say half a dozen at least two-loss teams. The most dangerous people felt were Georgia and USC, but LSU got in the title game because they won the SEC, and Georgia didn't even play for the title. USC also messed up and lost out on the title, but a lot of people felt like those two, Georgia and USC, who wouldn't even have made four-team playoffs that year, were the most dangerous teams entering the postseason of that year. We just had, a couple years ago, five undefeated teams at the end of the regular season. They're not going to fix that. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to take them very long to figure out that this isn't good enough.
Jerry Palm, I love your passion. You formerly of College BCS and CollegeRPI.com. You now full-time with CBSSports.com. I see you on the CBS Sports Network as well. Man, you're cool-looking, too. You're good-looking. It was just a matter of time. You know what they say?
Thank you. The cream
rises to the top, Jerry. The cream rises to the top. Do you have room for a schlep like me? Can you talk to your people and take me with you?
I don't know how big my coattails are. Probably not very big.
Jerry, thank you. Have a Dwight Gooden.
I think.
Great talking to Jerry Palm. Jerry Palm says a 16-team playoff is the only way to make it legit. I'll tell you who's legit, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you who's absolutely too legit to quit. And that is my main man, Mike Leventhal. Today on the show, we talk about Lotte. Let's bring Mike Leventhal in. He's with your Men's Health, Tennessee Men's Health Network. Mike Leventhal, it is Men's Health Month. I've gotten so many great comments. In fact, DCC Coltrane is here right now. He's learned a lot from these segments. He was telling me earlier. We were talking about you. In fact, I hope your ears were burning. About 10:45 on the one and only. Good morning to you, sir. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tony. Hope you are.
Mike, they love you out here. First of all, I've got some questions for you. Lotte is our... And DCC is heavily interested in this subject. I am as well. When you get to be our age, seriously, you don't feel like the same person you once were. You know, when you're a man, you get to feeling tired easily, beaten down. First of all, what is low testosterone that I hear Chris Treese talking about a lot on this station? Low T, is it real?
Oh, absolutely, Tony. You know, as men get older, the ability to produce testosterone declines. This decrease in testosterone production is sometimes referred to, and we've had conversations about this, as andropause or male menopause. So that's what many men in America are dealing with as they get older. Oftentimes it goes misdiagnosed and untreated. Many men feel like, well, they're depressed. So they go into the doctor, they talk to their doctor, they have symptoms of depression, and the doctor does what? Prescribes them with one, two, three antidepressants to take, and then another medication to take to guard against the side effects of that antidepressant. When, simply put, they've got low testosterone.
So they get a cocktail of drugs, and they might be dragging around low T. What are the symptoms of low T, Mike?
Well, there are several, Tony. First off, low sex drive and erectile dysfunction, increased irritability and or depression, fatigue, reduced muscle mass and strength, the inability to concentrate. You know that brain fog that you can get throughout the day?
Yes, yes.
And in addition to that, decreased bone density and osteoporosis, which you typically think is something that women suffer from, but it's something that men also need to be aware of.
And how does that manifest itself? Let's say you're a man, you don't have any broken bones, but your bones are getting a little more brittle because you're going through, as you put it, a little bit of male menopause, which is part of this low T deal. How does that manifest itself? How do you know that's happening to you?
Well, oftentimes it's somebody close to you, like your wife or your children, that point it out. That say, hey, you're not the same man you used to be. Oftentimes men work long hours. They get home. What's the first thing they do? Sit down on the sofa, turn on the tube, and veg out.
Grab a bag of potato chips. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
They've simply lost their enjoyment of life. And that's when a man needs to really take action, go see a doctor, ask them if they have, tell them they want their testosterone levels checked. If the doctor laughs at them and says you're silly, go see another doctor. There are doctors out there that understand this is a legitimate health concern and will treat you.
All right, now I hear Tracy on this program, on this station, and I love Tracy. I hear Tracy talking about that, you know, the hormone, the testosterone replacement stuff. Is that stuff legit? Is it real? Does it work?
Well, of course it's real. Of course it's legit, and absolutely it works. I've talked to hundreds of men throughout this state, throughout this country, that have been treated for low T, and they say it's changed their life.
That's very interesting. So you're
it
telling
is,
me,
Tony,
that,
and
you're telling
I would,
me that stuff works. You're telling me that's real.
Well, I don't have any personal experience with it, but I do know many people from all different walks of life who have been treated for low T. Many of whom I've encouraged them to go and seek treatment, that have come back to me and just given me great big hugs and said, thank you. You have helped me tremendously. My wife loves me again. My kids are happy to see me. I've got more enjoyment out of life. You know, Tony, we live in a beautiful part of the world, and it's a shame for people not to really get out there and take advantage of this beautiful place that we call home. And that's what really matters to me. You know, the other ED and some of those other symptoms, I mean, those are really secondary. When you start to lose your enjoyment of life, when you're depressed, when you're not the same guy you used to be, that's what really concerns me, and that's what really motivates me to encourage men to go to the doctor and get their T levels checked.
That's why you're a healer, brother. You are a healer. Let's talk here for a second. I've got thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners listening to us in Upper East Tennessee today, and they enjoy the program. You've got a special event coming up there, I believe, tomorrow. Tell me about it, Mike.
Yeah, Tony, in celebration of Men's Health Month, we are hosting the Tri-Cities Symposium on Men's Health in Johnson City at the Millennium Center tomorrow between 9:30 and 3 o'clock. Congressman Phil Rowe will be the keynote speaker. Many of you may know Congressman Rowe is a medical doctor and is part of the men's health movement, and he'll be speaking on the future of healthcare and where we are today as far as healthcare is concerned, with an acute focus on men's health.
It's a beautiful thing. Hey, I want to thank you for everything you've done. What's the website if folks want to find out more? Because we've learned today that low T is real, and if you feel like you're in that low T boat, there's no reason to suffer from it. I even did a little ad for Chris Treese today. It was next level.
Well, you can find us on the web, menshealthnetwork.org. That's the best place to go. We've got plenty of resources there on low T. Click on it and check it out. And if you don't mind, Tony, please post my phone number on Twitter. If anybody who's listening has any questions and wants to reach me directly, they may do so, especially on this topic.
Let me have it. What is it?
It's 865-406-0129.
Thank you, my friend. Have a Dwight Gooden. It's duly noted. My 5,000 or so Twitter subscribers will get your phone number. Have a Dwight Gooden.
Hey, you too, Tony. Have a great day today and a better one tomorrow.
I like that.